Morning, everybody. Thanks, Nathan. I'm Tom Hall. We're going to start this morning with a conversation about what's in the agreement surrounding the TIF for Port Covington. After months of public hearings, private meetings, and political maneuvering, a deal to provide tax increment financing to create the infrastructure for the massive Port Covington development appears to be headed for approval by the Baltimore City Council. The Board of Estimates signed off on the package Wednesday, and a final vote in the council is scheduled for Monday night. My guest today is Bishop Douglas Miles, the pastor of Koinonia Baptist Church and a co-chair emeritus of Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, or BILD, one of the groups of community activists who negotiated what many are calling an historic agreement. Bishop Miles, it is always a pleasure, sir. Thanks so much for your time.
Always a pleasure to join you.
So folks are calling this an historic agreement. You have a perspective of as an activist who's been busy in this town for a long time. What do you think? Is that an accurate characterization?
I think it's extremely accurate. I've been around since the time of the first $2 million that was invested in looking at the Inner Harbor and what could be done to restructure it, and every deal that has been made since then in terms of redevelopment of downtown areas. And this is the first deal that really has in it commitments and promises, not promises, but guarantees and mandates, bringing something uptown for the people of Baltimore.
In July, BILD and you yourself and the leadership team of BILD opposed the deal. You had serious concerns about it. What's in this deal? What strikes you as the most important things that are part of this agreement that you now support wholeheartedly?
The major thing is that we now have some guarantees and mandates in place that were not in place in the original MOU or Community Benefits Agreement. The agreement as proposed originally guaranteed 100 jobs for young people during the summer for 5 years, and about another $7 million in a discretionary kind of funding for the city. Nothing else other than that of any merit other than promises, as most of the other TIFs that, and pilots that have come down in the city have done. This agreement has in it 30% mandate of local hiring on all infrastructure hiring for the next 10 to 12 years. That's a first in Baltimore, a mandate of local hiring. It has in it $10 million for minority business investment and minority and women business investment, including micro lending for very small businesses. That was not in the original agreement. And so many other things, 20% affordable housing guaranteed from Sagamore Development, and a $25 million workforce development center, which will be crucial to the life of the city going forward.
Let's talk a little bit about the affordable housing part of this. As you mentioned, they agreed to set aside 20% of housing units for poor and middle-class families. I don't mean this morning to be a debate about Port Covington. I'm going to be moving to midday on Monday here on WIPR, and we're going to be taking up this issue, in much greater detail on that program, probably as early as this coming week. But I want to play for you some comments by a woman named Manisha Chirail. She's an attorney with the Public Justice Center. She was at the negotiating table with you and the leadership team from BILD. She is working in particular with the community activist Port 3 and BILD Up Baltimore, that coalition of unions. This is what she had to say about affordable housing.
Under the community benefits agreement, as we've seen it, the developer can opt to make a payment in lieu of about $30,000 to $60,000 for every affordable housing unit it's supposed to develop but fails to develop. However, it can offset this payment in lieu by the entire cost of any units it develops, which is about $172,000 a piece. Even though the developer has agreed to a requirement of 20% affordable housing, it can actually make less than 5% of its proposed 5,300 or so units affordable and technically be in compliance with the agreement. Second, the developer could choose to make all of its housing affordable to those at 80% of area median income, which is around $69,000 for a family of four. Only if the developer gets additional public subsidies, in the form of low-income housing tax credits? Does it have to go beyond that and make housing affordable for households at 60% of AMI, or around $52,000 for a family of four? But Baltimore's median household income is $41,000, and about 24% of our city lives in poverty. The deal offers virtually nothing to families at those income levels.
So again, I don't want this to be a debate. We're going to have debates about Port Covington and about the validity or lack thereof of this deal in the future. But in general, what is your reaction to that? There's a lot of facts and figures there. And for folks who haven't been covering this, you know, haven't been paying that close attention to it, it's kind of deep in the weeds. But if, in fact, the median household income in the city of Baltimore is around $41,000, and this affordable housing appears to be directed towards people who are making considerably more, where do you think that stands, and how's that going to move forward?
Well, is the deal perfect? No. Any deal you make, there's also the need to hold people accountable for what they agree to do. The deal has in it a significant commitment toward what's called 30% AMI, or average median income, which would include persons who are on Section A vouchers and so forth. And it's dependent upon the contractor's ability to get certain tax credits and so forth. So that's where the community pressure has to stay on Sagamore to make sure that that happens. Is it a perfect deal? No. But anytime you have the potential of 1,000 affordable homes in Baltimore, you've got to take the opportunity to press for that.
So much of these negotiations really come down to, at some level, a basic human trust between your team, your leadership team at Build, and the other activists who are at the table, and the folks representing Sagamore. You sat with them day after day for, 10, 11 days straight of negotiations, and this was a long process that happened late last month. Does this come down to a matter of you are... You and the Build leadership team feel comfortable with the assurances that you've received from Sagamore?
Well, part of it's based on assurances and relationship, and that's I think that that's key in any type of political arena. It's all about relationship and public relationship, not friendship, but public relationship. But in the agreement, there are certain things that are mandated that have to be kept, that have to be met, and there are oversight boards to assure that they are. Sagamore will give money to the city to hire an additional auditor to audit the project. Again, you make the deal, but after that, you have to make sure the deal is kept. Going back to Reagan, trust but verify.
Bishop Douglas Miles from Koinonia Baptist Church. He's a co-chair emeritus of Baltimore's United in Leadership Development. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Talk to me a little bit about your take on the relationship of the unions and your fellow pastors in the community of Black clergy here in Baltimore. I'm hearing on the street that there's perhaps a little friction between Black churches and unions, which tend to be sort of majority white run. You were at the table together. You were on the same side of this negotiation. But where do things stand in terms of trust in that dynamic?
Right. I don't think it was so much a matter of trust as it was what the union saw in its self-interest that at some point diverged from what we felt was in the best self-interest of Baltimore overall and the Black church and the faith community overall. So it's not a matter of trust. We've worked together on other issues. We operate on the system, no permanent enemies, no permanent allies, just permanent self-interest. And on this issue, we disagreed with the unions. It's our hope that we will be able to work with them as they move through the project to strengthen their relationship with the project.
And you mentioned that you're going to keep the pressure on Sagamore to make sure that not only are they monitored, and there's, as you mentioned, there's money in the city, there's a person or an office that's going to be in charge of keeping track of this. But what sort of leverage do you have continuing moving forward? How will you be able to keep the pressure on Sagamore?
Well, again, the basic thing is just public pressure and the fact that there are certain mandates in the agreement that have penalties with it that if those mandates are not met. I think what many Baltimoreans or some Baltimoreans may be missing is that Sagamore is giving $100 million literally upfront money. The Workforce Development Center, the commitment around minimum wage for construction workers on the infrastructure of $17 an hour plus benefits. So there's certain things that are mandated, and pressure can be brought to bear even legally in some instances.
As we finish up here, sir, one of the things that is of great concern to a lot of folks is the impact on school funding that the Port Covington development will have. Are you satisfied that moving forward, the Baltimore City Public Schools are not going to suffer financially because of this project?
Well, that's up in the air, and that's something that has to be really resolved on the state level. It has to do with a lot of formula that's related to development, not just at Port Covington, but other development that has taken place in the city. Our effort will be to change state law and state formula over the next 2 years so that education in Baltimore is held
home. So this got to go back to the legislature.
Has to go back to the legislature.
All right. Well, Bishop Miles, it is always a pleasure, sir. Thank you so much, and we look forward to continuing conversations about this.
Thank you.
Bishop Douglas Miles is the pastor of Koinonia Baptist Church and the co-chair emeritus of Baltimore's United in Leadership Development. We'll have more on Port Covington in the coming weeks as the Maryland Morning Team migrates to midday at noon. I'll start hosting midday on Monday, and we will be covering the Port Covington story as it evolves, perhaps, as I said, as early as this coming week, so stay tuned. Coming up, Joshua Harris joins me here in Studio A. He's the Green Party candidate for mayor of Baltimore. We'll find out about his vision for Charm City after a break. For the news, I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Here's Nathan.